welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, November 30th, 2009. This is Sam Minter. I've got Yvonne Bo with me. Say hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
And we forgot to say anything last week, but happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Happy Thanksgiving, so. Yes.
Anyway, so let's start with Yvonne. You have some news.
I have news. I officially resigned from the large conglomeration hardware computer company that I've worked for since I think I've tried to avoid mentioning their name. At least I think a couple of times I've probably mentioned it by accident at some point. I don't know if you actually
you've mentioned them occasionally in other contexts. Anytime you've mentioned them explicitly with regard to your employment there, I've actually bleeped it.
Okay, good. All right. So the company, and I can say it now. I have no problem. You don't need to bleep it. I've worked for Hewlett Packard. Okay, for the last
forever
12 years.
You did something else for a little while, then you went back to grad school. But after grad school, it's been HP the whole time, right?
It wasn't even after. I mean, I did my internship at HP.
Right.
Okay. And then after I graduated, I came back and started working full time. So yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, since what is this? 09. So since 97. You know, it's been a hell of a long time. You know, I got to be quite honest. I mean, it's just, you know, I joined the company because it was quite a different place to go work. I mean, I know plenty of people that worked at other big companies, and at the time when I joined HP, it was still a company that really lived by the real teachings of Bill Hewlett and Dave Packard, who really, if you look at a lot of management textbooks, you would figure out that they're management styles and techniques have been what really, you know, have driven a lot of the more progressive employment practices that you probably all of you value right now every day. Okay. You know, and that's why I liked it. And I liked the people and I liked everything. But, you know, the company is certainly not anymore that. And the main reason for it is just all the mergers, to be quite honest.
Well, we've said you haven't explicitly mentioned it or I've bleeped it, but anybody paying attention could probably figure it out, because I've occasionally mentioned things about your favorite person being Miss Carly Fiorina.
Yes. I mean, Carly Fiorina is, for the most part, to blame for the for that change. I mean, she's the one that drove this idiotic merger with Compaq, you know, which I still, even to this day, think it was a horrendous mistake at the time. Simply for start off with one reason: overpaid for the company way too much. I mean, Compaq, if you looked at how bad it was doing, would have probably wound up either selling itself, splitting off, or closing, you know, before too long. I mean, Compaq managed to lose money at the height of the tech bubble, okay? How the fuck do you wind up losing money at the height of the tech bubble, okay? Unless you're run by a bunch of incompetent idiots, okay? Which Compaq was, which Carly then proceeded to install a huge number of them in very high-level positions, at least for a while. Until then, she finally realized that they were completely morons because they were running all the businesses into the ground. They couldn't hit any of the numbers they promised or do anything of the stuff they delivered. Then she started firing them, you know, summarily. And then most of them wound up leaving HP in one way or another. I mean, you know, what's his name? The idiotic Ed CEO. Well, I won't say idiotic. Who wound up being boss of one of our friends when he was working for another company, but you know, went on to MCI, and you know, he worked there for a while, and you know, everybody just left. But the bottom line is this: I am actually, you know, I've had a range of emotions about leaving the company since I left. I expressed it to a few different people. The truth of the matter is that having been there for 12 years, I mean, I had, you know, I've had sadness, I've had happiness, I've had I don't know, I've had every range in between. I've been disappointed. I'm also happy at the same time. It's just the fact that I think more disappointing than anything is just the fact that I guess that when I joined the company, it was a certain kind of company that I think that the founders expected us to be able to, as employees, to continue. in that way for a lot longer than obviously we were able to. And that I guess I must say is a failure on the ones that were there, including myself. Even though God knows I tried. But anyway, it is what it is. You know, it's a company. It's no worse or better than any other. I know that some of the stuff that happens at HP, it's not, you know, and that I get maybe upset about is no different than any other company. The problem is that you get upset about it because you knew that it wasn't like that before, and I guess that's the bigger part of disappointment, you know.
Well, you know, and a lot of the cases when, you know, I mean, it all depends, but I mean, you definitely see situations as well, like, you know, at one of my former companies when I was working at the big financial company that no longer exists that had a bull as his mascot.
called Maryland.
Nobody should know. Anyway, but, you know, the place that I entered there, the organization I was in when I began there, was a very different animal than where I was when I left. I entered a group within the company who was all about new media and figuring out the internet for the company and trying new things and being innovative and all that kind of stuff. And that lasted for several years. And then in the aftermath of the bursting of the dot-com bubble, mm-hmm. you know, the company basically decided, oh, well, I guess all that was bullshit. Let's, you know, we're going to put this back in charge of, all the traditional marketers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, all of those organizations basically got dismantled and different parts of them got stuck inside a marketing organization that was all about, you know, newspaper advertisements and television during sports and had absolutely no idea what really to do with websites and more to the point didn't care. You know, and so it became increasingly obvious over time that, you know, we were not in the same spots, you know.
Yes.
And so, you know, things move on and, you know, as you know, I've heard a number of people say, you know, companies have no loyalty to you. You know, you don't need to have any loyalty back for the most part, you know, and, you know, it's a marriage of convenience. When it works. When it doesn't, you know, one side or the other of the relationship is going to figure it out and move on.
Well, yeah, I mean, I you know, one of the things is when I joined the company, it wasn't like that.
I understand.
That wasn't a marriage of convenience. When you joined HP, you didn't join a marriage of convenience, okay? And the fact that changed over time, and I will tell you that the breaking point of that relationship was actually specifically in the summer of 2001.
That was a long time ago.
That was the watershed moment. I can't remember the exact date specifically, but there was a date specifically when during those 3 months, three major things happened. One was that. Usually, you know, that was the middle of the tech recession. So normally at HP, when we were in a recession, what the company did is instead of starting to lay off people left and right for no reason whatsoever. I mean, I'm talking, you know, I'm just talking about cutting people. Well, you have six, you need to get rid of one. Why? But because we need to get rid of one. No, we usually go and we'd figure out ways to cut expenses. So people would make pledges, and so you'd figure out, well, I'm gonna do this in order to save money. I'll give up. Some people gave up pay. I said, look, I'll give up 5% of my paycheck for the next quarter or two. I'll do this. I'll do that. So people would do that, and we'd tally them up, and we came up with, I don't know, we came up with a ton of money that people would save. Behind everybody's doing that, Carly decided we got to do a layoff. It doesn't matter. I don't care. Even if it was irrelevant, but she decided that she wanted to fire people anyway. So after everybody gave up all that money, they still fired I don't know how many employees anyway. Well, everybody, you know, took that as, you know, fuck you. Then we'll never give you another dime out of our pockets, no matter what. So right. That completely destroyed the relationship between the company and the employees, you know. That event. I mean, it was, you know, I mean, people never trusted the company again. And then a few weeks later was when she announced the merger with Compaq, and that really shook everybody's foundation really, really hard, because the Compaq people took the merger in a quite interesting way. Let's just put it this way. I found out one of the things that Compaq people did when we merged all of a sudden, there were certain rules about how you would get jobs. So they would allow one person to be able to compete for, say, you were the director of storage, right? So you were supposed to be only compete for that job. But if you didn't get selected and you were above at a certain level of the company, the non-selectee was to leave the company. Well, all of a sudden we figured out that the Compaq people figured a way to game the system. So they were all competing for 7 jobs, whereas the people from HP were only competing for 1 because they told us that those were the rules. So we're like still like, well, you know, I mean, we're supposed to compete for 1. And then the other thing that we found out is that before the merger and all the subsidiaries outside the U.S., they gave themselves massive pay raises. So the moment that we merged, all of a sudden we're sitting there, we're doing this analysis of people, and I had people on my team, and I'm looking at their pay, and I'm like, what the fuck? All these people are making – Jesus Christ, how the hell could this guy at this level be making this kind of money? And then we checked the records. And we checked that just before the merger closed, they all gave themselves massive, huge pay raises, 50, 70, 100%. Because they figured, oh, what the fuck anyway, you know, nobody will care. So it was just – I was just like, I – you know.
Yep.
Well, you know, you merge that culture with the other one. What do you want? Anyway, that's done. So, you know, so I'm going to be gone. I'm going to work for a company that is owned by a Japanese company. Okay. So, you know, this will be a significant change. But the one good thing is that no more travel anymore. So we will probably unless I'm going on a vacation on the weekend, you won't get me jetting all over the place anymore. So, you know, which I'm actually happy about.
Yes, I know. For the last couple of months, you've sounded increasingly stressed about the travel. So I'm glad about that. It sounds like this will be better for you.
And they're going to pay me more money.
That's always good too.
Okay, there you go.
Anyway, we're over time for this segment. We'll take a break. We'll be back in a moment with something else.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, we are back, and since we were just talking about, you know, corporate cultures and stuff. Oh, by the way, I should mention, you know, usually when we start these, like, both Yvonne and I have lists of topics, and we decide together amongst the list of topics what we're going to talk about. The last few weeks, Yvonne's been really busy and stuff, and so I've had a list, and he really hasn't, and so we've basically done my list. This time, we actually both had lists. But, you know, since we've been going off my list the last couple of weeks, we're going off Yvonne's list for most of the show unless we run out of topics. But I don't think we will. So, you know, out of the list Yvonne gave me, I think that actually, since we were just talking about corporate culture and stuff, we should you know, go next to
the AOL Time Warner.
AOL.
Okay.
Because, you know, just to do a couple things here, the history, of course. You know, AOL, big mega expansion. You know, everybody remembers the floppy disks. They got really big, really huge.
The CDs.
Yeah. First the floppies, then the CDs. And, you know, during the whole .com expansion, they got really huge, really fast. And they got their market valuation, whether or not their real value, but their market valuation got big enough that they decided that they could essentially gobble up Time Warner.
Well, and their market valuation got to close to $200 billion, okay? I mean, you know, which is mind-boggling. I mean, it's at IBM and HP combined, and I think that you still – well, you're around there. We're a little bit over, but basically that's the kind of – size we're talking about here.
Yeah,
okay.
Basically we're talking absolutely huge. And so they bought Time Warner, and then things started to implode fairly quickly. You want to take it from there, Yvonne?
Well, I think the one thing about it is that I look, I always still remember that we had a conversation around the time, and I think it may be by email, and if we probably look for it, we could probably find it. I think that we talked about all of a sudden Steve Case announces he's buying AOL, and we have friends who worked at AOL, okay? Yeah. So we, you know, we said, well, first of all, I think we had been talking about how the stock price was just insane. We're talking about it because the friends of the people we knew, you know, were living these ridiculous lives of just, you know, millions of dollars with the stock options and everything.
And by the way, a lot of them were doing the thing where when they vested their options, they would, instead of cashing out, they would buy more stock.
Right. It was just, yeah. And, you know, it was just crazy. So we were talking about this, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I think we mentioned, wow, look, Steve Case was smart. He decided to buy an asset since all he's got is air, okay? You know? Because, you know, it was just – The valuation of AOL was impossible. It was impossible. I mean, the company just would never – I made the calculation. I said, there is no way this company would ever be worth this. They will never make enough money to sustain this valuation. And lo and behold, you know, so they had the merger, and everything went south from there. I mean, you know, in the next couple of years –
well,
you know,
one of the things that, you know, I was talking to somebody about this just the other day, is that they didn't do – what
all the shit they talked about.
Well, not even all the shit they talked about. Like what you and I just mentioned, where they basically come in and say, we bought something of value. Now we're going to run Time Warner.
Right.
No, they came in saying, you know, AOL is the shit. All you Time Warner people are idiots. Right. You don't know what you're doing.
Right.
We're gonna run everything, and we're going to do it this way. And basically, instead of taking advantage of the huge asset they just bought and then essentially just making it a management swap where all of a sudden
right.
Steve Case hopped over and now he's running Time Warner and AOL is a nice adjunct of that. Instead of that, they tried to really make AOL the preeminent part of that relationship.
And all the Time Warner people hated them so much. As a matter of fact, as AOL started to implode and basically they booted out all the AOL heavies. I mean, they even got rid of the name from the stock. They went back to the old stock symbol. They were just like, you know, this is ridiculous. This is not AOL Time Warner. This is not a fucking merger. We're Time Warner, and we've got this fucking thing called AOL that's still sitting around here somewhere, okay, that we have to deal with eventually. And they finally did. They finally offloaded AOL in a stock, you know, swap that valued AOL at $2 billion. $2 billion out of $200 billion. The combined value of the company at the time in a merger, because also Time Warner's valuation had also
right.
been inflated with the tech boom, was $360 billion. The two companies combined right now, I think, are worth $36 billion for Time Warner and $2 billion for AOL.
Right.
Okay? So 90%, you know, and, you know, that's a 90% that evaporated that. You know, if you bought the stock at that peak, you should really probably just blow your brains out right now because you'll never see that money ever again.
Hey, there are plenty of other dot-com era stocks that did worse.
Yes, there are, as a matter of fact, amazingly enough. But, you know, but finally, it's over. Finally, you know, they got rid of it. You know, they went and they came out and the first act they did is the new CEO who came over from Google fired about 33% of the sales force as yeah. his spinoff gift. And, you know, I mean, AOL, I think, has only about 2,000 employees, 3,000 employees. I mean, and it's worth $2 billion. I mean, from that incredible peak. I mean, it's over. Finally, you know, AOL Time Warner, rip, dead, done, doesn't exist anymore.
Well, you know, there are a couple of things there. You know, first of all, I don't know, like, I keep coming back to, like, what could have been here. You know,
I don't think there was ever it could have been.
No, they were always overvalued. But there
were
things that you could have.
They were run by idiots.
But there are things you could have done with the combined companies.
That would have worked a lot better. Oh, sure, absolutely.
I mean, first of all, you could have absolutely concentrated on the content and said, okay, yeah, the content is king. We still value all of the stuff that Time Warner is doing. We want to make sure. And yes, we are going to start talking about online distribution. But oh, by the way, this dial-up shit, it's about to die. So let's get in broadband heavily.
Let me put it to you this way. And that is, you bring an excellent point there. Time Warner was, they don't own it right now, but I forgot that a big component of their value also was a Time Warner cable. They were one of the largest cable operators in the nation. If they would have grabbed the Time Warner cable operation, rebranded it as AOL High Speed, right, tried to expand that through the nation and move, had a first advantor, you know, had a first mover thing there where they would do that, I'm sure that they could have gone out better. But they were stuck with their dial-up thing in their ass, and you know, they thought that the stupid AOL software is going to live forever, and they were slow in moving off of their damn software into the internet, move their assets in the first place. It was a series of blunders.
Let me ask you this. Okay, now that they've separated off, you say it still has a market valuation of $2 billion. What the hell is the company going to do? What is the future of an independent AOL at this point?
Who knows? I mean, they're still milking cash off dial-up. Okay,
well, yes, and as we discussed a few months ago, it was only a few months ago where I stopped paying them $13 a month, even though I hadn't logged in for years. Yeah, so, but is that
a
business model?
They have some
model?
Assets like MoviePhone, MapQuest, you know, they do have some assets, I guess, that if they figured out something to do with it.
Well, when's the last time you used MapQuest instead of Google Maps?
Actually, I got to admit that MapQuest, no, but I've used MoviePhone, though.
You have used MoviePhone. Okay.
Yes, I have. I've used it a lot, as a matter of fact.
That's okay. I can't say I've ever used it.
Okay. No. But I have used MoviePhone. And I will tell you, I've used MoviePhone the last month. Okay.
Okay.
I also noticed that apparently you don't remember. Do you remember ICQ?
Yes, I know they own that.
Yeah. Well, apparently the largest online chat thing being used in Germany and Russia.
Okay. Well, and for that matter, you know, AOL Instant Messenger is still heavily used, although they're not really monetizing it
haven't figured it out.
Well, nobody I know who uses AOL Instant Messenger actually uses the AOL client for it anymore. Like, they have ads in that.
I'm using it. Right now, as a matter of fact, almost everybody I know that uses AOL Instant Messenger on a Windows PC uses the AOL client.
Okay, see, even when I had a Windows PC, I'd moved on to like Trillion and other programs like that. That
I would tell you that
and don't have the ads.
Everybody I know that uses AOL Instant Messenger on a PC uses the AOL client.
Okay, and they have a few ads in that,
and they have ads. I mean, I'm looking at them right now. You know, so.
Okay. I just, you add all those things up, I still can't see a future.
No, I agree. They got to figure out a strategy of what to do based on what they have. I don't know if I, you know, there's a whole bunch of discombobulated assets and a brand name somewhere.
And they have the nice new logo that's just AOL with a period after it.
What's the fucking period for? I mean, what? You know, it's over? Period means?
That's exactly
who the fuck thought up of that thing?
Yes.
AOL, period.
Well,
any other questions?
And you know, practically the only thing they had that was recognizable was their old logo.
I know. I don't know what the hell.
I mean, not that it necessarily had a great reputation associated with it anymore. But.
Exactly. But, oh, no. But there were stylized versions of the logo. I don't know if you saw. I saw it with a fish or with a sky or with a sun or with a thing. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Okay. Anyway, we're past time again. Now let's take a break and we'll talk about yet another something, something, something.
What do you get when two housewives produce an online poetry journal? Poems celebrating dishwater, breastfeeding, and lunar phases? Quick trips to the pool boy? Maybe. But they like to believe they offer much more than that. There's no telling what you'll get at the No-Tell Motel. But I hear sneaking out and keeping everything hush-hush is kind of sexy, and they're hot for discretion. Having it all keeps our two housewives awfully busy, so they like to stop and smell the posies, spend quality time with their poets, which is why their rendezvous lasts a full 7 days, a new poem each weekday. Each year they slip their room key to 52 poets and indulge in 260 poems. Their spouse's misfortunes are your gains. Meet with them daily at notelmotel.org. They'll be in room 5C, sipping the latest cocktail recommended in Martha Stewart's Living, Scribbling Marginalia.
And we're back for segment three.
I'm gonna make a quickie note on something that I wrote down so we can take care of all the business company stuff. Okay.
Okay. Go ahead. We got a couple more business things on our list.
We got a couple
too.
More business things. Okay. But I'll make this. This one should be quick. Okay. I don't know if anybody's heard of PsyStar. PsyStar was a company that was trying to make Mac clones right now. Okay. And they got into a legal brouhaha with Apple because obviously, you know, apparently it should be illegal based on the software license and whatever. Well, anyway, in CNetNews.com, because of the lawsuit that's been going on with Apple in order to shut them down, which I believe Apple won, they had revealed some of their financial projections, which I think you'll find interesting. PsyStar, okay, and actually the commentator of CNET News, I think, mentioned something about them being insane. Okay, and that's why I'm like, PsyStar financial investors crazy, and I'm like, what the hell? Well, and I'm wondering, why is he saying you're crazy? Well, they were showing what their 2010 financial projections were for the company. They said that they were estimating on the low end to sell 1.5 million clones next year on the low side. On the high side, they thought that they could sell 12 million. And this is how they were pitching investors for the company. You know, Apple sells 2.5 million computers a quarter. Okay, mm-hmm. These guys were planning to sell more computers than Apple. Okay, in a year, that was their optimistic goal. But you see, you would say, well, I mean, they must have sold thousands. You know, so far since they started as a company, you want to know how many computers they sold? 750. So I'm wondering how in the world they were going to get from 750 computers to 12 million next year, okay? Or even 1.5.
Those are pretty close. I don't know. I think it's an easy ramp from one to the other.
Oh, I'm sure. So anyway, I just thought that was kind of interesting how optimistic the PsyStar guys were about selling, you know, that they were going to, you know, I don't know, they were going to flood the market, I guess. But so that was that. The other thing I had here on the business to mention was just the Dubai debacle.
Dubai debacle.
Yes. Just to explain one thing, it's not that the government of Dubai itself defaulted on its debt. The government of Dubai had an investment vehicle, a company, okay, Dubai World, which owns a whole bunch of companies that invests on a whole bunch of stuff.
Right,
okay?
But I mean, this is one of these things that, correct me if I'm wrong, this is one of these sovereign trusts, right, where basically it's an investment vehicle, but it's owned by a country.
It's owned by the Dubai government, yes. And, well, the truth of the matter is if you've seen the pictures of Dubai, I mean, they've built fucking everything over there. I mean, they even have an indoor ski slope. They've built islands. They've built the tallest building in the world, all this stuff. Well, that takes a lot of money. Apparently, borrowing close to about $100 billion. Well, the problem is that with the recession and collapse in the housing market in Dubai, they just said this week that there was a $3.5 billion debt payment coming up, and they couldn't make it. They're tapped out. And, this, of course, caused a lot of jitters, especially of the holders of the debt and stock markets and everything. And you know, it happened, you know, they announced it on Thursday night, which everybody thinks was intentional because it wasn't just a holiday in the U.S., but there was a holiday also in a lot of other countries. So I guess they figured that if they did it on that day, give them a breather until Monday, you know, when people really got back. But, you know, look, stock markets really took it in the chin, you know, based on that last week. But, you know, it just goes to show you, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just impossible to keep borrowing and building like that. You know, they have still so much. They've built a lot of stuff. It looks wonderful. But, you know, it's like, I mean, it was based on a different economy, I guess. I don't know. They can't afford it right now anymore. They're
Well, yeah, and yeah. So it naturally brings up the question, of course, of, you know, there are plenty of other countries who have been spending beyond their means too, and is there at some point where that crashes too?
Well, I don't know. You know, there's.
I mean,
you know,
and it doesn't have to be. And it doesn't have to be by default too. It can also be via inflation.
Let's take a look at the worst cases of debt to government debt to
GDP.
GDP. You know, they're Japan, Italy are probably the two worst cases. They're well north of 100%.
Just for reference, what's the U.S.?
The U.S. right now is around 70.
Okay.
Even with, you know, the one thing is that because of the recession, because of the deficit how it is right now, you know, some of the projections are there was going to get close to 100% based on the current deficit projections, and if the economy doesn't start expanding soon. But right now it's not at 80% yet. It was 60 something during the, you know, the last few years. So, but anyway, you know, if Italy and Japan haven't collapsed yet. If you know, the only country that I recall that recently had a real sovereign debt default in the last 10 years was Argentina. Argentina decided not to pay their debts, period. Are there going to be more countries that do that? If you look at the big economies that are developing, such as India, China, Russia, Brazil, you know, the big BRIC countries, they all have plenty of capital and plenty of money and relatively low levels of debt right now. So I don't know if any of those would go. I think that more of the countries that are vulnerable are places that overextended themselves, like Dubai. Now, the truth of the matter is that Dubai being part of the United Arab Emirates, the United Arab Emirates has money to probably bail them out. But right now, so far, they have refused. Okay, this weekend they started loosening the strings and saying, well, maybe we will contribute some money, blah, 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 blah. But so far they had declined to do so to back up the debt that was issued by Dubai. So we'll see what happens, okay? But as of now, you know, they asked for a six-month moratorium on debt payments. And the other thing is that unlike a lot of stuff, I think that a lot of the debt that Dubai did acquire was actually backed up by assets. Now, whether those assets have the value of what they borrowed, that's another story. But, you know, there are a number of assets, and not just assets in Dubai, but companies that they bought outside. I know the Dubai ports, for example, had invested in buying ports around the world, for example. And there was a big controversy because I think if I remember, Dubai Ports was trying to buy the port of Boston a couple of years ago or something.
Yeah, there was a big Dubai Ports kerfluffle.
Right. Right, but they own ports around the world, and they have investments around the world, and they have a whole bunch of assets. So, you know, this could be more of a liquidity crisis in the short term than a real, say, you know, collapse. Total crisis collapse. So well, we'll see.
You know, and, you know, the whole thing with Dubai was it was an attempt to sort of bootstrap that area into sort of, you know, a modern leader of the world kind of place.
And it's worked. I mean, for a significant part, it's worked because, you know, they know they don't have oil. They knew they had to do something. A lot of people go to Dubai. They have tourism. They have a lot of stuff that they didn't used to have. A lot of companies are basing their operations for that area, the Middle East, you know, basing them there. You know, I know I've met a lot of people that are based out of Dubai that are, say, work for Price Waterhouse or other companies like that, you know, that they have, you know, they're basing their people there. So it's worked to a certain extent, but I think that obviously that they overextended themselves in a couple of areas, and the economic downturn has got them by the balls right now. So,
you know, once you start about hearing about building a set of artificial islands in the shape of a world map, you got to think there's something going on.
And the Palm Island and the art of the
you
world
know, could that possibly
thing?
Be a sign of a bubble? Nah.
Yeah. Nah. No way.
Possibly.
Nah. And the world's tallest building and an indoor. I like the indoor ski ramp.
Indoor skiing is good. You know. Yeah.
So anyway, all right. So Dubai is in trouble. We'll see if they, you know, if they fall and they can't get up.
Okay, let's take another break, and we will be right back. This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel. End notes by Brenda Sikowski. 1. Bees. Worcestershire Needle Museum closes to deswarm chimneys. Workers stung. New plans call for scaffolding and mesh. Dear museum, let the bees keep their needles. Also the wax factories and necropolis. The sugar cube igloos. Sincerely. Lack magic. Pre-wrath rapture. Ladies and gentlemen, witness disappearing. In cliffside asylums and sanatoria, consumptive lungs clot with soft white cheese. Colony collapse. Dear invalids, expose yourselves. Sincerely. Down labyrinthine wings, ventilators suck and hum. Call for the button accordions. Dear social director, strike up the band. Save one last dance. Swan. Under the ultraviolet chandelier, white feather gowns flutter and glow otherworldly. Antiseptic, the last wild spores germinating. Dear end. For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday. Okay, and there was one more list on one more item on your list, Yvonne. And that
the
was
White House Crashers.
Yes, indeed, the White House Crashers. And you know, let me start by saying one. Well, first of all, just as background to people, if anybody hasn't heard, basically there was a state dinner. A couple socialites from Virginia who are also like trying to be reality show contestants.
Socialites, you're calling them socialites. They're a couple of idiots.
Whatever. Anyway, they were not invited. They made themselves what. They got into the state dinner by passing themselves off through security, etc. Now, let me start by saying this one thing. Back in 1993, I had the opportunity to visit the White House a couple times.
I was actually going to ask you about that
through our college radio station. Basically, what happened was, for the inauguration, we had applied for credentials to cover the inauguration for our little college radio station. We were declined. We did not get anything for the inauguration, but apparently it got us on some list. So later, when Bill and Hillary were pushing their healthcare initiative, they had a series of events at the White House for radio talk show hosts. And basically, it was a week. It was two days worth of stuff, basically. One day where... I forget what the 2 days were, but anyway, we got to come in and, you know, Bill and Hillary and Stephanopoulos and a whole bunch of other people in administration came up and talked to us for a few minutes and took a few questions. And so we were somehow in there in the room with real radio talk show hosts, you know, including people you have heard of, so that was interesting. And then we got to do our shows live from the White House lawn, and that was cool. But the thing that came to me for security wise is I remember at the time in 1993 being shocked at how the security did not seem to be what I thought it would have been at the White House. We did have to have our names on a list. They presumably did a background check just to make sure we didn't have anything bad in our FBI files or something. But then once we got there, it was basically, you know, your standard little metal detector setup. And then bags. I don't think we even went through the metal detector. We just had a little guard open our bags and look inside. And I remember thinking, you know, my God, if I had wanted to do something bad here, you know, 30 minutes later, I was standing, you know, 15 feet from President Clinton, you know, and let alone like, okay, their little check might have caught a gun or something, although they didn't even look at all the pockets.
You could show up to the White House and you could walk in and get a tour.
I was just going to mention this. I mean, like, we had... like, we had radio equipment. Like, there could have been a bomb or something in the side of that, you know, and maybe they had invisible security measures, like, you know, that would have detected something and brought extra attention. But, you know, you don't even need that. Like, if you're a well-trained individual, you know, you can do damage with your hands. Or, you know, if you're going to a dinner party, you grab a fork, for God's sake. You know, you can do damage with a fork, you know. But here's the thing. I thought that, okay, there's, you know, maybe it wasn't quite as built up a security apparatus as you would have thought it had been, or maybe there's some invisible stuff. But surely, after all the paranoia of 9/11, you know, and everything that happened, everything would be locked down. But apparently not. Apparently these guys were just like, oh, they must have left us off the list. And they're like, okay. Now, apparently there are some interesting things that are out there. Like, these folks did apparently have some connections with the Indian embassy. And so there may well have been one of the Indian guests who would have been like, oh, yeah, I know them. You know, because they had done some work that involved coordinating with the Indian embassy or something like that. But they weren't on the list, and they just talked their way in. And again, you know, shortly thereafter, they were within a handful of feet of the president, the vice president, all kinds of other folks, you know, let alone the Indian prime minister and those folks. And, you know, the Secret Service has, you know, of course, said, oops, we really screwed up. We're going to look into it. We'll find out what's going on and adjust our procedures accordingly, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's striking
that
it's still possible.
It's appalling. It's appalling. I mean, fuck. I mean, what the hell is the person thinking that let him in? That's all I'm saying.
Well, right now they're probably thinking, where am I going to get a job now?
And they should be. I mean, you know, just for the sake of I'm the guy standing here at the fucking entrance of the White House. I ain't letting anybody fucking in. Oh, yeah, yeah, they're my buddy. Fuck. Oh, yeah, yeah, I know them. Yeah, 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 let them in. Don't worry about it.
Well,
Are you fucking kidding?
And you know, it's a standard thing that you expect. Like, you know, we've talked before about how most security is just theater. It's not really meaningful, you know. And, you know, in most cases, if you know what you're doing, and if you just look like you belong and look confident, you can walk your way through most things, and you can talk your way through.
That may be most places, but this is the fucking White House.
And, well, exactly. And this is like,
this is a dinner where there's a list of guests. It's predetermined. You know who the fuck's coming in. Unless that person gives you a fucking blood sample at the fucking entrance, they ain't fucking getting in.
You would think.
Yeah. You know? Shit. I mean, this is not like, oh, no, I got my college ID. I don't have my real ID. Can you still let me in?
Yeah, I'm over 21, really.
Yeah, 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 really, really. I mean, well, what the fuck?
Well, and you know, there have been other reports that, I mean, basically the number of threats against Obama is off the charts, you know,
exactly,
compared to previous presidents. And you'd think they'd be super extra paranoid, you know. I mean, they shouldn't even need to be super extra paranoid. It's the fucking White House, for God's sake.
It's the fucking White House, for Christ's sake.
I mean,
if something fucking happens there, I mean, yeah.
I mean, basically, you think back. And after, you know, first, you know, well, it depends how far back you go, but every time there's been a presidential assassination or an attempt, you know, going back all the way to Lincoln, for God's sake, I mean, back in Lincoln's time, they had almost no security, but slowly they ramped up security over that every time there was an attempt or something happened, you know, and then just within the memory of people alive today, you know, there was the Kennedy assassination and they ramped things up. There was, you know, several attempts on Ford. You know, the Reagan was shot. After each and every one of these, they tightened things up further. And God knows, you know, they tightened things up after 9/11 even more. So it's just amazing that these people didn't even do anything all that extraordinary. They just were like, oh yeah, they must have left us off the list. Okay, sir, go on in. What? You know, and some other people pointed out, of course, that, you know, with everything they say about profiling and good or bad or whatever, you know, the guy actually had a Middle Eastern name. And you'd think, you know, the Secret
Service... That would have set off some alarm bells!
I mean, I honestly am one of those folks that thinks that it shouldn't necessarily be an automatic alarm bell, but...
If the guy's not on the list! You know, you get a guy not on the list, you get this, I mean, shit! You think? Just out of common sense!
So... Well, what they're not telling you is they're not really worried because it wasn't the real Obama there. It was a clone. The real Obama was off at Pizza Hut somewhere, you know?
Oh, okay. Oh, well, you know, well, that's a good thing. Okay.
So, and they weren't really all that worried about Biden, so.
Yeah, well, you know, Biden, no, whatever. He could take 50 pictures with him. I mean, you know, what the fuck, whatever. what a fucking Keystone Cops operation. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you know, and I'm sure they will tighten things up after this. But still, it's just shocking the simplicity.
It's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. It's just absolutely ridiculous. You expect it
maybe. Okay. Well, it turns out that they impersonated somebody that was on the guest list and they tied them up in their car or something. No, not even that. They're just like, yeah, they forgot to put us on the list. We should be there. Okay, fine. Let us in. Come on. Anyway, enough for that topic. We've exhausted your list, Yvonne. Did you want to do anything from my list or should we wrap it up?
I guess we could. I think there was one thing from your list, but I can't. Yeah, let's do one more thing and then
okay,
we'll wrap it up.
We'll take a break. We'll be back after this. You know, I really have to come up with more variety for my you'll be back after this, or maybe just, you know, end it and start the thing, or you know, I don't know.
That sounds good.
But it's the same thing every time. It's boring. Yeah. Anyway, so I think, you know, the two things that when we discussed this beforehand, you mentioned at least some level of interest in, seem to be first of all, the ones that there's probably no interest, so I'll do these in 10 seconds each. Afghanistan, Obama's going to say something on Tuesday. We will talk about it after Tuesday so we don't look like idiots because I'm going to probably put the show out on Thursday and it would just be really stupid sounding if we talked about something and it was different, even though there have been leaks about what it's probably going to be. Healthcare, once again, is ongoing. The actual stuff in the Senate is starting.
That's a thing.
Yeah, this week. And, you know, it looks like it's a hard situation in terms of coming up with something that'll pass, but we don't know what's going to happen, so we won't talk about it now. Tiger Woods crashed or got beaten by his wife or something, depending on who you talk to. And, yeah, whatever. There have been sightings via contact logs and such of new iPhone hardware in San Francisco that's apparently being tested. And in the past, this has happened in October-ish, November-ish, and then new phones have actually been launched the following summer, so we may be in for new iPhone.
And I'm announcing that if the new company I'm going to, I can get my email through the iPhone, which I believe I probably can, I will be getting an iPhone.
Yay! Finally. Okay.
No more Samsung phones. Gosh, thank God.
So the two other things, Swiss minarets and which I don't think is the one you want to talk about, although it is an interesting issue somewhat. The final thing, though, was that there have been ongoing rumors the last few weeks about Murdoch has been saying for a while that he wants Google to pay for the right to index his content. Google's been like, yeah, whatever, dude. If you don't want us to index your content, just, you know, put in the robots.txt file that says not to, and we'll stop. And of course, they have never done that. But the new wrinkle is that there are now rumors that Microsoft is considering paying Murdoch to delist from Google and only let Bing search his stuff.
Well, I got to tell you that this goes a little bit with what Murdoch has been thinking over the last couple of years, his evolution in thinking, which got started really with the purchase of the Wall Street Journal. Because everybody has been speculating when Murdoch bought the Wall Street Journal, oh, he's going to turn into a free site. He doesn't go for this paid content shit and whatever. And then all of a sudden, he gets a hold of the company, starts looking at the numbers, and he realizes, holy shit, these guys are making a ton of money charging for their content. Mm-hmm. I mean, just charging for it. And I think that all of a sudden he had been outspoken actually before the purchase about the paid content, until all of a sudden he got a hold of it and then realized, holy shit, why the hell shouldn't we charge for it? And so now I think that, you know, he's turned this into looking at all the other Fox, you know, properties and trying to see how we can monetize the content and all of those. I mean, which a lot of other companies are actually trying to figure out, to be quite honest with you. I mean, if you look at the newspaper media and all these others, I still keep seeing now experiments with different newspapers, you know, trying to charge for their content, because otherwise they don't see how they can make it right now.
Well, you know, but I think these particular schemes are completely off base, though, and I don't think will work out well for these folks. I mean, if they actually implement any of them. For one thing, like, let's just leave Bing out of it for a second. If you just have, you know, Google and Murdoch's properties, mm-hmm. you know, every time Google indexes you and shows you stuff, they are sending you traffic.
Traffic.
If anything, should be fucking paying them, not right. asking them to pay you. And
I
if
agree.
You really believe that, put it, actually do it. You know, it takes 10 seconds in a configuration file on your web server, and kaboom, Google stops. And if you really believe that, go ahead and do that. But what will happen is your traffic will plummet, because, yeah, you'll have whatever subscribers are already, you know, going to your site on a regular basis, but you will lose all of those people who just find your stuff through search. And that's a significant portion of the traffic there. And this is a way of committing suicide, you know.
Unless all of a sudden a number of major content providers all decide to do it at once.
Yeah, but well, first of all, if they did, they're anti-competitive things they could get in trouble for.
No. If they did it in collusion, you're absolutely right. But say, for example, Murdoch decided. Say, you know, look, the revenue stream I get from my online is not so great right now. I can fucking afford to take the risk. Fuck it.
No, I'll tell you.
I'll see what the hell happens.
I'll tell you, even if a whole bunch did it at a time, what they'd see is their traffics would all collapse. People would find other places to go. Yes, there would be people.
I don't know.
There are certainly people who would still be like, oh, you know, I want to go to the New York Times. And for the big-ass publications, for the big name brand national publications, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, New York Times, that caliber of publications might be able to get away with it, and they'd still all the smaller, lesser tiers, forget it. And let me move on real quick to Google, the Bing thing. I think this would be an absolutely—it may or may not work as a business proposition, but I think it would be an incredibly destructive thing for how the internet works and the flow of information. If all of a sudden we had sort of a segmented content world where, you know, these sites are only indexed on Bing. These sites are only indexed on Google.
I think these sites are only indexed on Yahoo. I got to agree that, you know, if you want to charge for your content or you think that you got a different model for how to monetize your content, that's okay. But, you know, if search engines, you know, can't come to you, so then it becomes incredibly difficult to navigate the web, period.
Well, and what would happen if you really had that? You'd have the rise of new search engine aggregators that
right.
would go out and search all the different search engines and then bring them back together. You know, but oh my God. No, you don't. I mean, I think it would be a mess. I think it would be counterproductive. I think the fundamental premise of the web is that you want traffic, and search is a primary way of getting people there. And yes, sometimes that involves excerpting part of your content to get people there. So like what, you know, they're worried about the kinds of thing Google News does, where they provide a page full of headlines and maybe the first paragraph or first few sentences of articles sourced from elsewhere, but then they provide the link to your damn article. And yes,
right.
there may be some group of people who's going to Google News as their primary news source and then clicking elsewhere. Not a huge number, I don't think, but for the most part, you know, they are sending you traffic. So to tell them, you know, we don't want you doing that, you're insane.
Yes, I know. It's so stupid. I know. But hey, it makes for interesting conversation, though, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, and I don't know. I just, you know, I'd like to see one of these folks try. I mean, like, I'd like to see them try it and just watch it fail.
Just to see what the hell would happen.
I mean, maybe I'm
wrong.
I mean, and like,
maybe I'm wrong too. I mean, I don't know. I mean, but I'd like to see what the hell happens, though. I will tell you, I would be interested in seeing it.
And well, and although they didn't delist off search engines, I mean, you did see an example of this. I mean, obviously, Wall Street Journal has had a lot of content behind a paywall for a long time. There are a few other, publications.
But that content, it's still, if you search on it on a search engine, it'll come up.
Right.
And one thing they did modify from before, whereas you used to just hit a brick wall and you can see it, Murdoch did modify it a little bit. That you got some free content, or you got some free, at least a preview.
You got like
of the
first few paragraphs. And then click here
right.
to subscribe and get the rest
exactly.
or something like that.
Right. So they did modify.
And I think that's actually smart. If you are a site that has content that, you know, is unique enough and has few enough substitutables that you can get away with that, by all means, I hate it as a consumer, but, you know, I understand, you know. But, you know, that won't work for sites where the content is easily reproduced, you know, and it's not really that unique, and there are plenty of substitutables that are free. I mean, and one example that you'd think would be in that category, I mean, the New York Times tried to put a whole bunch of their stuff behind the paywall, and they did that as an experiment, and they end up almost completely reversing themselves a few months later, because basically, you know, they weren't getting the number of people subscribing, and the readership was plummeting, and specifically, you know, a lot of this was editorial content. And what was happening is basically, you know, editorials that used to people were always talking about, oh, what did this person say? Nobody was talking about them anymore because you had to go in to see them, you know. So I don't know. Anyway, we'll see. I mean, people will continue to experiment with this thing, with this stuff. I think these schemes of trying to, I mean, if Microsoft and Murdoch actually do this with the we're going to only list on Bing, you know, that's just going to be bizarre. And I don't think it's going to have the results they want.
I think that you're right, but I would love to see what the hell happens, though.
That's true. Okay.
It'd make for interesting conversation. So anyway.
Indeed. Well, we're out of time. And once again, even though we theoretically are doing 5-10-minute segments, we're longer than that. So anyway, thanks everybody for listening. Once again, tell all your friends, blah, 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 blah. Email me at abblesmay@abblesmay.com or post on abblesmay.com with any comments you may have. And, you know, we'll see you again next week. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.